Welcome to Ring of Fire, I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, the biggest news of the week. Donald Trump's lawyers had to slink into court on Monday and tell the court that no, Donald Trump cannot pay the $464 million bond in his fraud trial. That means in less than a week, we could be seeing Letitia James seize Donald Trump's assets. I'll bring you all the details. And of course, Donald Trump not only made headlines for not having any money, but he also made headlines for his bloodbath comments over the weekend. And I'm going to dissect that and explain what this means. Also, former Vice President Mike Pence is out there trashing Donald Trump for referring to the Capitol rioters as hostages. And of course, Judge Eileen Cannon, who is overseeing the documents case, is doing even more to rig the trial in Donald Trump's favor. I'll bring you all the details. All that and so much more coming up on this week's Ring of Fire. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member at rofpodcast.com. And if you want Ring of Fire every day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. On Monday, Donald Trump's lawyers were forced to go into court, well, via a filing, I guess. But either way, they had to tell the court that there is no way in hell Donald Trump can pay the $464 million bond that he owes as part of the judgment against him in the New York fraud trial. In fact, the lawyers didn't just say, not only can he not pay it, but we also cannot find a single underwriter willing to write the bond for us. And they said they approached no fewer than 30 underwriters. So we're talking about 2.5 dozen insurance companies that write these kinds of bonds. None of them out of the 30 were willing to do it for Donald Trump. In other words, he doesn't have the money to pay the bond, which of course means he can't appeal it. But his lawyers had that covered too, of course, because they asked the court, would you please just postpone the payment of the bond till after the appeal is finished? Now, I don't know how familiar y'all are with how the law works, but that's not how it works. The whole point of the bond is to make sure that once the appeal process is done and Trump loses, presumably, that that money is ready to go to be paid to the state or to the victims, depending on the kind of lawsuit it is. In this case, the state was allegedly the victim, so they were the ones who would get the money. Now, if he does not pay that bond, then that means, according to the current rules, unless the appellate court changes them, he can't appeal. Which means March 25th, which is the deadline, so we're talking less than 1 week away, he's done. It's over. He can't appeal. He has to pay the money immediately. And if he doesn't pay it by close of business on March 25th, again, assuming the Court of Appeals does not save him, Letitia James can walk into the courtroom on Tuesday morning and say, hey, judge, here's the list of Donald Trump's properties that I'm going to seize. I just need your approval and we'll get the process underway. Which means a week from now, those properties owned by Donald Trump, possibly Trump Tower in Manhattan, possibly Bedminster, maybe Mar-a-Lago, all of that by this point next week or maybe in the week after. I don't know how quickly it'll go, but all of those properties could be owned by the state of New York. That is amazing. Again, we got to wait and see what the appellate court is going to do, because they could come in and say, okay, we will give you a reduced bond because we don't want to be unfair and say you can't appeal this ruling. You know, the appellate process is, of course, something that everybody should be entitled to, even though there's really nothing to appeal here because there's no evidence of any kind of wrongdoing or improper actions by the judge in this case. So really, he shouldn't be able to appeal. And honestly, that is probably the only thing that would prevent the appellate court from accepting a reduced bond. the fact that there's no evidence to suggest there was any wrongdoing, no impropriety on the part of the judge. Therefore, there's no reason for us to even hear the appeal. So we're not going to give you a reduced bond because there's no way you're going to win on appeal. And that is the most likely scenario. But I do also see that the court probably could, just for the sake of, you know, being fair, in an overabundance of fairness, to be honest, they may reduce the bond, let him get away with it, but then he'll lose the appeal and still have to lose all his properties to Letitia James. So really, it's just delaying the inevitable. But I do love the fact that his lawyers were finally forced to go to court and tell the judge he doesn't have the money, even though about a month ago, Alina Haba was absolutely on conservative media saying, hey, he's got the money, don't worry about it, he's good for it. Well, turns out, as usual, that was a lie. And Donald Trump, considering the fact that he owes more than he has on hand, is effectively broke. Obviously, there was a lot of talk over this past weekend about Donald Trump's bloodbath comments during his rally in Ohio, where he suggested that the whole country, as he put it, would witness a bloodbath if he does not get into office. Trump maintains, of course, that he was only talking about the auto industry, even though he literally said the whole country. His defenders say that these quotes were taken out of context. Democrats are saying not so fast. If you look at his actual words, doesn't look like it's out of context. But Trump came out Monday, you know, after this whole thing festered over the weekend and blew up, Trump came out Monday and attacked the Democrats on Truth Social by saying this is all their fault. Here's what he said. The fake news media and their Democrat partners in the destruction of our nation pretended to be shocked at my use of the word bloodbath, even though they fully understood what I was simply referring to imports allowed by crooked Joe Biden, which are killing the automobile industry. The United Auto Workers, but not their leadership, fully understand what I mean. With the electric car mandate being pushed by Biden, there soon won't be any cars made in the USA, unless I'm elected president, in which case auto manufacturing will thrive like never before. All right, you know what? Here's what we're going to do, folks. We're not even going to sit here and talk about the bloodbath comment. We're not going to talk about him saying that immigrants, you know, he doesn't even consider some of them people. What we're going to do is something the media should have done from the start: to debunk Donald Trump's idiotic claims about him saving the automobile industry. Because this is not the first time that Donald Trump has done this. He did it repeatedly in speeches last year. He did it again at his rally in Ohio this past weekend. Claims he saved the automobile industry that was going under before he came into office. He made that claim while he was in office. So let's examine the factual points that Donald Trump is trying to make. And I did that. And it turns out, as per usual, everything he said was an absolute lie. The automobile industry was suffering tremendously following the Great Recession in 2007 and 2008. The Bush administration actually came in, gave them a cash infusion, and helped them limp along until President Obama was sworn in. And when Obama was sworn in, one of the first things they did was they had the Treasury Department work on a bankruptcy restructuring deal for the automobile industry, backed with a bailout from the federal government. That bailout and bankruptcy restructuring from the Obama administration saved the automobile industry. It caused them to hire more workers. They were selling more vehicles. They invested $48 billion in new projects during the Obama years. So the automobile industry lifted up under Obama because of the actions taken by outgoing President Bush and then President Obama. So the automobile industry was not on its last leg when Donald Trump came into office. But he did put them in a worse financial position than they were under his two predecessors. Because in 2018, Donald Trump introduced a 25% tariff on imported steel and aluminum. And as a result of this, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, this resulted in the automobile industry taking on exorbitant costs, which reduced their output, causing them to then lay off 75,000 employees. So, media, you could have done everything that I just did when talking about Donald Trump's bloodbath comments, but you didn't. Instead, you talked about maybe he meant it, maybe he didn't. Oh, here's what the left is saying, here's what the right is saying. You missed the most important part, that Donald Trump is lying that there would be a bloodbath in the automobile industry, when it's pretty obvious that he is the one who put them in worse financial shape to begin with. Those are all verifiable facts, by the way. Didn't even take me all that long to do the research for it. But I do my homework. I do the legwork that the rest of the media is refusing to do. So hopefully everybody learned a little something today, right? Donald Trump is not only using increasingly violent and dangerous rhetoric, but he's also, at the end of the day, nothing more than a liar. During a speech last week, long before his bloodbath speech in Ohio this past weekend, Donald Trump had referred to the Capitol rioters that are currently sitting in prison, those that have both been convicted and those that are in jail awaiting their trials. Trump referred to them, once again, as hostages. Now, this, of course, is not the first time that Trump has used that word to describe these people, nor is he the first politician to even use it. Marjorie Taylor Greene has been calling these people hostages basically ever since they were first arrested following the Capitol riot. But there's one person who, for this statement, it was the straw that broke the camel's back. And that person happens to be none other than Donald Trump's former vice president himself, Mike Pence. And this past Sunday, during an interview on CBS's Face the Nation with host Margaret Brennan, she asked Pence about these comments from Donald Trump calling these people hostages, even though most of them have been convicted or pleaded guilty. And here is what Mike Pence had to say. Well, I think it's very unfortunate, at a time that there are American hostages being held in Gaza, that the president or any other leaders would refer to people that are moving through our justice system as hostages. And it's just unacceptable. I was there on January 6th. I've no doubt in my mind, Margaret, that some people were caught up in the moment and that entered the Capitol, and they're certainly entitled to due process of law for any nonviolent activities that day, but the assaults on police officers, ultimately, an environment that claimed lives, is something that I think was tragic that day, and I'll never diminish it. Let's not forget that they were walking around the Capitol chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." And according to reports, Donald Trump was watching this from inside the White House and said, "Maybe they're right. Maybe Mike deserves it," is the quote that those closest to Donald Trump say he made. There was also somebody who somehow erected a gallows in the crowd outside the Capitol. And we still have no more information on that. I do think that's kind of the thing. Maybe we ought to look into that a little more. Like, who built the gallows? Like, who showed up at the Capitol riot with a bunch of lumber and a hammer and a drill and said, "Hey, I'm going to build something right here. Y'all step out of the way." I don't know about you. To me, kind of seems like the thing we should have some answers to. But Mike Pence is absolutely right about the whole "let's not call them hostages" thing. And I'm not even buying into, however, his thing like, "Oh, some people were caught up in the moment." That doesn't matter. You break the law, you break the law. It doesn't matter if it was a crime of passion or if you were just swept up in the mob mentality. You still did it. And you should face justice for it, which, to his credit, Mike Pence does seem to agree with that part of it. But I'm not excusing any of their behaviors because they were caught up in the moment. "Oh, Trump made us do it." Yeah, but you still did it. That's still you. So you deserve what you get at this point. Pence also, by the way, went as far as to say that he is not going to endorse Donald Trump. And that, to me, is also just as big as him attacking Donald Trump for calling these people hostages. But rest assured, I promise you, like so many other Republicans, when Mike Pence goes to vote in the 2024 election, he will 100% be voting for Donald Trump. He's not going to like it. He's not going to be happy. But at the end of the day, it'll be the same old spiel. We have to come together to defeat the Democrats because that's the only thing that matters. It's team sports. It's win or lose. And by God, we gotta win no matter what it takes. So Pence can talk a big game right now and act like he has a spine, but we all know come November, he'll bow down to Trump just like the rest of the Republican Party. Donald Trump loves to attack his fellow politicians, whether it's on the left or right, as people who are unable to function without a teleprompter. He has repeatedly told us that he doesn't even use teleprompters. And that's why this past weekend at his rally in Ohio, he became irate when his teleprompters were unreadable. Here's what happened. Donald Trump was giving his rally outdoors, and Ohio happened to be experiencing a bit of a storm. Not necessarily with rain, but they, in the area where Trump was, had 35-mile-an-hour winds. So his teleprompters off to the side were just kind of flapping in the wind, and he couldn't read them. And at one point, he became so irate that he actually said, "Don't pay these suckers," referring to the people who, I guess, put the teleprompters up, because in Trump's mind, they're responsible for the wind. I don't even know how that works, but according to Trump, the people who install teleprompters are also the same people who control the wind across the United States. Totally a normal thought for a normal person to have, right? But then, realizing that he was getting angry and he doesn't want to portray that to the public, he then joked, "I think Joe Biden put them in." And of course, everybody, either way, even if it had been Joe Biden or people on Joe Biden's team, they still don't control the wind. So they wouldn't be responsible for your teleprompters flapping in the wind. But the funnier part is not just that Trump claims I don't have to use teleprompters. He even said it actually at that point in his speech. He's like, "Isn't it great to have a president that doesn't have to use teleprompters?" As he's whining about not being able to read his teleprompters. And of course, that's the point where things went totally off the rails, because he couldn't read because they're flapping in the wind. So he starts to ad lib. And it was at this point that he said this. "You know what's interesting? Joe Biden beat Barack Hussein Obama. Anybody ever heard of him? Every swing state, Biden beat Obama, but in every other state, he got killed." I'm not even sure what to make of that thought. Is that a thought? Is that an actual idea? I mean, it's certainly not historically accurate. Is he somehow referring to the 2008 primaries where Biden flamed out before we actually got to the swing states? So yeah, that's not a thing that happened. Or does he think that Biden had to run against Obama in the 2020 Democratic primary? None of it makes sense because Donald Trump has no idea what he's saying. And this is what happens when he goes off script. And that is why he was so angry when those teleprompters kept flapping in the wind to the point where he couldn't read them. He started making stuff up because that's all he can do. If he can't read it off the screen in front of him, he's just going to go to his make-believe world and pull random bullcrap out of there and feed it to the crowd. And as per usual, they ate it up because God forbid they have any critical thinking skills whatsoever. On Tuesday morning, Donald Trump apparently woke up in a bit of a bad mood, and he got on Truth Social and issued several different posts attacking the state of New York, attacking the New York Attorney General, and attacking Judge Arthur Engoron. Now, I'm going to read you what Donald Trump put on Truth Social on Tuesday morning. And it's pretty obvious why he was in such a bad mood, and he kind of hints at it in one of the posts. But here's what Trump said. The first post: "Any business thinking about moving into New York State is crazy. The level of anger and hostility toward businesses and business people is incredible. Numerous people have spoken to me about this since the racist and politically corrupt AG, who ran for office on a platform of 'I will get Trump' without knowing anything about me or my business, and her corrupt puppet judge, Arthur Engoron, who has already been overturned 4 times on this case, a record, started doing a number on me." He was not overturned on anything that actually mattered. And in fact, he wasn't actually overturned on anything. It's just that the appellate court issued a stay on some of his rulings at the time the trial was taking place. So Trump's already out of the gate getting things wrong. He then described Engoron as a crazed, Trump-hating, rogue judge, has zero respect for the appellate judges, and has torn apart the legal system in New York State, making it impossible for outside businesses to want to come there. And then in another post, he said, Judge Engoron actually wants me to put up hundreds of millions of dollars for the right to appeal his ridiculous decision. I would be forced to mortgage or sell great assets, perhaps at fire sale prices. And if and when I win the appeal, they would be gone. Does that make sense? Witch hunt, election interference. Then in another post, he said this. Engoron wants me to put up the ridiculous fine I did nothing wrong before I get a chance to appeal his crazed ruling. A first. Nope, that's actually not a first. That's actually how it works in civil lawsuits. You want to appeal, you are not allowed to appeal just for the sake of delaying a payment. So you have to put the money in a bond so that they know, hey, okay, he's got the money. He's not doing this just to buy time to get the money. Then you're allowed to appeal. But the reason Donald Trump was in such a bad mood is because the world found out on Monday that he's got no money. He's been turned down by over 30 bond agencies. They said, no, we're not going to back this bond for you. Sorry, you don't even have the cash assets, according to you, to pay the bond. Like, why would we do that? So Trump is angry. He's not necessarily just angry about the possibility of selling his assets. He is angry that everybody knows about it. See, that's the difference. He's known for a long time what his financial situation is. But we didn't. We didn't know how bad things were for him. But now we do. Trump haters and Trump supporters alike, we know that this guy does not have the money that he says he has. It was all a facade. It was fake. And it is falling apart and crumbling around him. And as I've been saying for years, really, the biggest threat to Donald Trump is that he would be exposed for not being as rich as he thought he was, or as rich as he convinced us he was. And that's happening right now. It happened Monday when his lawyers told the court, we can't pay this. So we'll see what happens. But as that March 25th deadline approaches, you can bet Donald Trump is going to get more unhinged, more insane, and he's going to take out his anger on everyone else. But really, he did this to himself, and he is the only one he has to blame for it. He'll never do it, but that's the reality. Judge Eileen Cannon on Monday evening handed down a ruling, basically what was supposed to be instructions for the jury, but Eileen Cannon's instructions, I guess we'll call them, were so bad and so misguided that legal experts have literally been calling this insane. So here is what happened. As part of her jury instructions to both federal prosecutors and Donald Trump's team, which, for the record, she's supposed to be asking them for their jury instructions, which she did do, but she went ahead and included some of her own. And she essentially gave Jack Smith an ultimatum. And that ultimatum is this, and this is, of course, what legal experts say is absolutely insane. She says, Jack Smith, you either, one, have to show the jury all of these classified documents that Donald Trump had, these highly sensitive national security documents that they do not have the clearance to see. You either have to show them, or the jury will have to assume that these were actually personal documents from Donald Trump, which basically means we have no case. So make your choice, Jack Smith. Either you instruct the court to knowingly give top secret documents to people without security clearances, or essentially Donald Trump goes free. Let me read you this. Cannon's evening order alerted federal prosecutors and Trump's legal team that they, quote, must engage with the following competing scenarios when considering whether Trump can be charged with unauthorized possession. Either a jury is permitted to examine every record a former president swipes and claims as personal to determine whether it is, or jurors must be told that, quote, a president has sole authority to categorize records as personal or presidential during his or her presidency. So Cannon says you have to basically tell these jurors that they have to assume these are just his personal documents if you're not willing to show them to them. Because, again, they don't have security clearances. At this point, Jack Smith has no choice. He's got two choices. But the first one, the most obvious one, he has to go to the Court of Appeals and basically tell them she's insane. She doesn't know what she's doing. She is literally rigging the trial, trying to rig the jury for Donald Trump unless I disclose highly classified intelligence to commoners. Like, no, remove her from the case. He already has a mountain of evidence that he could use to get her removed from the case. Like, that is not questionable. But this, even just this alone without the other evidence, should be more than enough to get her thrown off the case. And to be honest, if Democrats win this election, you know, retain the Senate and take back the House, I think this lady needs to be impeached. They have the authority to impeach her. She's a federal judge. I think that needs to happen because she has grossly abused her power at this point. No question about it. This is an abuse of power. She is doing it to protect Donald Trump. She is bastardizing the justice system, and she does not deserve to be on a federal bench anywhere. She doesn't even deserve to be on a park bench at this point. That's how bad she is. And then, somehow, she managed to make it worse. Cannon goes on to say that the Presidential Records Act is unclear about how to allow a president to make that kind of determination, you know, whether it's presidential or his personal, even though, ironically, the 1978 law was passed in the wake of President Richard Nixon's Watergate scandal as a means to ensure that White House records are considered U.S. government property that should be overseen by responsible historians and librarians at the National Archives. In her ruling, she wrote, quote, although there is no formal means in the Presidential Records Act by which a president is to make that categorization, an outgoing president's decision to exclude what he or she considers to be personal records from presidential records transmitted to the National Archives and Records Administrations constitutes a president's categorization of those records as personal under the PRA. Except it literally doesn't do that. There's clear guidelines. She is now lying about what the Presidential Records Act says. That, by the way, is where the impeachment comes in. Either she's too stupid to know what the law says, or she is intentionally lying in her jury instructions to benefit Donald Trump. It's a, like, he, Smith, if you do not immediately request for her to be removed from the case, then you've lost. Now, I did say there were two possible options. Of course, going to the appellate court, asking for her to be dismissed. That's option number one, and that's the best option. That's what you should do. But if you're worried about showing classified documents to, again, commoners, we're not allowed to see them, then there's something real easy we can do about that, right? You're at the DOJ. Why don't you make a call to Merrick Garland, tell him to make a call to President Biden, tell him to go ahead and declassify all these documents right now? Then you got nothing to worry about. You know, kind of pull a one-up on Judge Cannon and say, okay, you're going to try to call me? I'm calling your bluff. Here you go. You could do that. That would be the hilarious thing to do. But the legally responsible thing for you to do right now is to get Judge Cannon off that case immediately. Donald Trump's lawyers, along with, of course, his co-defendants Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, Robert Chealy, Michael Roman, David Schaefer, Harrison Floyd, and Kathleen Latham, filed a motion with Judge Scott McAfee in Georgia this week, begging him to please reconsider your decision to not remove District Attorney Fonnie Willis from the Georgia RICO case. Here is what they wrote in their court filing. The March 15th order, which of course refers to his ruling from last week saying either Willis has to go or Wade has to go, but Willis can stay. They didn't do anything wrong. It just kind of looks bad, is what the ruling essentially said. Anyway, the March 15th order is of exceptionally great importance to this case, substantially impacting defendants' rights to due process. Additionally, given the lack of guidance from the appellate courts on key issues and the fact that any errors in the March 15th order could be structural errors that would necessitate retrials, the grant of certificate of immediate review is both prudent and warranted. Basically, what they're asking the judge, to put it in layman's terms, is, Judge, please reconsider and kick Fani Willis off the case because we just don't like her. Okay. What I just read to you, even though it sounded like a legal argument, right? A lot of legal words in there, right? Oh, crazy. You know, a lot of legalese. It's not an actual legal argument. And even if it were a legal argument, it's important to note that this is a legal argument that actually cannot be made. Because see, here's what Judge McAfee actually did in his rulings. Now, as we remember, he issued two rulings last week. One of them, he dismissed six charges, three of them against Donald Trump. But in that motion, he actually said, this matter is appealable. So if you're not happy with this ruling, either side, you can appeal it. And Willis, you can actually refile the charges, make them a little less vague, and we can probably, you know, go forward with that. But in his decision to not kick Fani Willis off the case, he didn't say so. He didn't say this is appealable. He effectively said this is final. You're not going to take it back to me. You're not going to come and try to renegotiate with me as Trump is clearly trying to do. This is the word. This is what's happening. We're moving forward. So shut the hell up and get on board. So even if you could make a legal argument out of that mumbo jumbo that they filed, you're not even allowed to do that because the judge basically said, it's over. It's done. I've issued my ruling. Don't question it. And immediately, they questioned it. And I got to tell you, we have seen Donald Trump and his legal teams repeatedly question the rationale of judges and cases before this one. And it never ended well for him ever, literally ever. So keep on doing what you're doing, guys, because you've pissed off every judge you've been in front of so far. And Donald Trump has always had to pay the price for that. The one thing I actually like about Donald Trump lawyer Alina Haba is that she never fails to prove how stupid she is. Every time she gets the opportunity to go in front of a camera or behind a microphone, which she loves to do, she just makes a complete and total ass of herself each and every time. And I love every second of it. See, here's what happened. On Monday, Alina Haba went on a podcast where she said, quote, despite the fact that witnesses, frankly, had said that they were great clients, we all made money, they did nothing wrong, we got slammed with this egregious number, and I'm confident we'll overturn it. We lost before we even walked in, she said. She said, I'm confident we will overturn it. So what is so stupid about that, right? Why am I saying that this is an idiotic statement to make? You know, obviously you want a lawyer that's going to go out there and be like, by God, we're going to get this overturned. I'm going to bring justice for my client. Well, the reason this was a very stupid comment to make is because Alina Haba made this comment before the court filing that I know she was aware of, where Trump's lawyers on the case she worked on said, yeah, we can't pay the bond. We've reached out to 30 different individual bond insurers and none of them will take us up. He doesn't have the money. Trump admitted on Truth Social Tuesday morning, I don't have the money. I'll have to sell my properties. And Alina Haba's still out there like, oh, no. Don't worry about it. We got this in the bag, guys. We're going to appeal it. We're going to overturn it. You can't appeal it if you can't pay the bond, you moron. And you know this, you should know this. I think at this point, everybody in the country now understands how this works. And you're out there being as arrogant as ever, saying you are confident we're going to overturn this. How? Where's the money going to come from? Who's going to pay the bond? Are you going to pay it? You don't have that kind of money. So what are you going to do? She went on to say, there's no question this was political. It's not even from the beginning. It's before the beginning. Yeah, before the beginning, by the way. That's an interesting one. It's before James got into office that she said she was going to do this. She ran on getting Trump. She said she was going to go into Trump Tower. This is a political prosecution. Yeah, she did mention Donald Trump and the prosecution against him in her campaign. And kind of sounds like she made good on that campaign promise, right? She ran on a I'm going to hold this guy accountable platform. And lo and behold, she held the guy accountable. You can't fault her for that, right? I mean, all the time we talk about politicians not keeping campaign promises. And here we have one in New York that absolutely kept that campaign promise. And for the record, it's also not illegal to make public what your plans are. We had all known that there was investigation. That was not a secret. And she did what she said she was going to do, and she did it in a pretty spectacular way. It was your job, however, Alina, to convince the court that they shouldn't do this. You failed at your job. So don't be mad that Letitia James succeeded at her job, but you failed at yours, but you're still going out there being arrogant, saying we're going to overturn it. The way that Engoron wrote that ruling, it is basically unappealable even if Donald Trump did pay the bond. They have no evidence of wrongdoing, which is kind of what you have to have. There's no evidence of mistakes. You also would have to have that if you want to appeal it. They're just appealing it to delay the inevitable. And the inevitable is that Trump is going to lose everything because Alina Habba is as incompetent as she is arrogant. And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire. But if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. And now for the members-only portion of the Ring of Fire podcast.